Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
So the Taoiseach is continuing his St. Patrick's visit to Washington today, meeting representatives from various multinationals who've invested in Ireland and also Irish companies based in the United States. And it follows on from the Shamrock ceremony last night at the White House, along with that near hour-long press conference and meeting between President Trump and Micheál Martin earlier in the day. Donald Trump told the audience at last night's event that as a New Yorker, no one knew the Irish better than him and that we're always going to have that special friendship. Let's get more on this now. I'm joined first by Louise Byrne, political reporter with the Irish Mirror, and we'll speak to economist David McWilliams in a moment. So Louise, you're there in the United States. You were in the Oval Office yesterday. Is it any surprise now in retrospect that we were treated more like our European neighbours, Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer, than Vladimir Zelensky was treated just a few days later?
I think in retrospect, probably not. But there was, you know, some sense of nervousness amongst everyone. The Irish delegation, I think, was feeling pretty calm going into it yesterday. But I think, and as we have discussed, you never know with Donald Trump, you never know what's going to come. You never know the banana skin that might present itself. But he, and as Micheál Martin said himself afterwards, President Trump seemed to be very fond of Ireland. It was funny, the Taoiseach said that he was very complimentary of our economic model. And I mean, he was, that's no word of a lie, but he was more so complimentary and how have you managed to do this with all these American companies in Ireland. But like you said, nearly an hour long press conference, which I think a lot of us were surprised by, and we were kind of in the room and we knew we were in there for a very long time, but I don't think any of us actually thought we were in there for nearly 50 minutes. And, you know, it ended up being so long that the meeting between the Taoiseach and President Trump ended up being quite short, but the Taoiseach and his team seemed to be very happy coming out of it. And I think, you know, that was probably the most important part, that it seemed to go smoothly enough for everyone.
And can you describe what it was like? Because watching it and, you know, all of the other meetings he's had with world leaders, it seems like quite raucous. You've got all of the reporters shouting, Donald Trump decides who's going to ask a question. And even as he begins to answer, there's still shouting going on with people trying to attract his attention.
It's fairly mad now, to be perfectly honest. And you kind of had to just keep shouting and try to hope that President Trump would look at you. I think the Irish media delegation did quite well. We seemed to get a lot of questions in, but, you know, it's a lot of pushing, a lot of shoving. You're kind of standing up against the back of the couches. So I was kind of standing behind JD Vance, and we all kept getting in trouble for leaning on the couch, but you were kind of trying to get in and trying to catch his eye. And he was actually, at one point, he made an effort to, so one of the Irish reporters went to ask a second question, and he was like, oh, I'm going to give someone else a question who hasn't had one. So he was very much in control of the whole situation. There seemed to be no handler or anything like that telling him to wrap it up, that, you know, you've been here for nearly an hour, President Trump, we need to get into this meeting with the Taoiseach. It was kind of him saying at one point, he was like, okay, this is the last question. I mean, the American reporters are quite boisterous as well, but we were flattered, actually. You might remember the gentleman last week who asked President Zelensky why he wasn't wearing a suit, came up to the Irish reporters afterwards and told us we were very ferocious. So we'll take that. But no, it's fairly crazy in there.
Yeah, and you asked a question about the Occupied Territories Bill. I think that was your voice I heard, Louise, at that event. Donald Trump said he didn't know about that.
No, and I mean, I think he spoke about the wider situation of what's happening in the Middle East after that, but he didn't seem to know that. He didn't seem to have, because the kind of second part of my question was, are you concerned about Ireland's relationship with Israel? And was this a topic of conversation when you met the Israeli Prime Minister a couple of weeks ago? And he didn't seem to know that. And I mean, that's perhaps a good thing in and of itself. And, you know, I was kind of looking to the reaction to some of it online and people saying that perhaps the question shouldn't have been asked. But I think we all kind of went in there knowing that we had to ask about Ireland and Israel's relationship. Mm-hmm. But he didn't really seem to know too much about it. He kind of steered away from it. And I mean, that's not a bad thing for Ireland, because we do know that relationship between Ireland and Israel is quite fraught, where Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu are quite close. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that he didn't know that. And, you know, I don't think Micheál Martin was particularly enthused with my question. But
you had a job to do and you did it. And that's what you were there to do. We mentioned when we were talking to you yesterday, you were telling us that members of Enoch Burke's family were on the flight with reporters. You you were on that flight too, of course, heading over to Washington, and there was speculation about what role they might play. Now, they didn't have a formal role, but they were there or close to the White House yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. So I think there was kind of a sense of nervousness amongst the Irish delegation, because I think they just did not know where the Burkes were going to turn up. And I mean, I think it became very clear yesterday morning, as soon as we went to the vice presidential breakfast with J.D. Vance, that the Burkes would not perhaps be playing a formal role. But they were protesting just kind of outside of the security cordon at the White House. It's kind of blocked off on either end, and you need a pass and you need to go through security checks to get through. And they were protesting down there, and they had signs saying America needs to know the truth about Ireland. It was the pictures of Enoch saying how many days he'd been in prison for. We went down to see them very briefly. Again, they didn't want to talk to us, and they said that, and as is their right. But there was actually one passerby speaking to them when we were down there, and he was trying to, you know, Sean Burke was speaking and telling him about their beliefs on transgender people, and he was saying it was a religious belief, and there's actually a guy getting into a back and forth with them. But that's as big as a role as they played. They didn't see the Taoiseach. The Taoiseach wasn't really near them. So it's interesting that they'd come all this way to protest near the White House, and I didn't have any formal part. But I mean, I guess the question was, where would they have had a formal part? But I think it was just the fact, like I said to you yesterday, we just didn't know. But they seemed to go off without a hitch, and they didn't seem to be in anything official.
Okay, well, look, the visit continues. There'll be more news as we go through the day. But for now, Louise, thank you for joining us from the United States. Louise Byrne, their political reporter with the Irish Mirror. Now, David McWilliams is with us. Hello, David.
Morning, Claire. How are you?
I'm very well, but I'm interested to get your take on all of this. Donald Trump talking about our pharma industry, and I think we were all holding our breath yesterday when he was bringing up these things, you know, the trade deficit. Then he said he loved us, then he punched us again, then he said that he loved us. But he is gunning for the EU. We're in no doubt about that. We are going to get caught in that storm when it comes.
Well, I mean, I think we are. I was watching it yesterday and I was thinking, did you ever see that movie, The Horse Whisperer?
Yes.
With Robert Redford, who could speak to horses and could calm them down and tame them. And I got the impression, looking at Micheál Martin, that he's the current, the Trump Whisperer. He's kind of figured out how to deal with this creature. As Louise was saying, you don't know who's going to turn up. And I think Micheál Martin, you know, he seems to be able to speak Trump, the language of Trump. And that's kind of pretty important. I think that we've learned that you're dealing with a mercurial individual. You're also, we've learned to somebody, we're dealing with somebody who's got a very quite nostalgic view of Ireland and seems to see Ireland through the framework of his Doonbeg golf course. It's almost like the Doonbegization of Irish foreign policy is what we're seeing. And I think that Micheál Martin did as well as could be expected, if not better, dealing with the issues, because they didn't deal with the issues. That was the actual key idea.
Yeah, defensive boxing. Isn't that how some people have portrayed it today? But it is what's coming down the tracks that we really do need to worry about, David. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And just one fascinating thing I read this morning, Politico, a European-based and very well-sourced magazine, that Michael McGrath has been sent by the European Commission instead of the Finnish commissioner today to Washington. So it seems that the commission have realised, okay, the Trump whisperers on this little island off the west coast of Europe have some special relationship. And that is quite something I think we should note. But to come back to the big issues, right? Trump made it very, very clear yesterday just how viscerally anti-EU he is. He continued to almost make the case as if Ireland was a sort of an unwilling hostage of this nasty EU. And he hasn't got a problem with you, Ireland, but I've got a problem with the EU. He also obviously wants to and is imposing tariffs on the EU. And there is a fascinating, Claire, historical link between all this. Trump has said that his main hero is a guy called William McKinley, who was the president in the 1890s and early 1900s. And this was a period where McKinley was referred to as the Napoleon of tariffs, right? And the US raised about 50% of its total tax take from tariffs. That's the first thing. The second thing, that was a period where America was this sort of pioneer, new country thrusting out to the West, but also isolated from Europe. Their entire policy was, let's not get involved. So I see this as almost Trump and Vance and the MAGA movement trying to go back to a period in history which they think was a golden age. And in order to go back there, they must replicate the policies of that golden age. And those policies are tariffs and anti-European, anti-getting involved in the rest of the world. Now, the problem for us, of course, is that that period when America was involved in Europe, where the world, what they call the rule-based order, was very much adopted by and protected by the United States, was a golden age for Ireland, because we could do what we could never do in the past, which was we could trade with the big boys on terms that were favourable to us. Now, as you know, those terms are being changed by Trump, and of course the European Union is reacting. So in a way, we are caught in the middle. Just to give listeners a sense, for example, of the pharma industry and how big it is, Ireland is the third largest exporter of pharmaceutical products in the world. It's $92 billion of exports from this country. So we have managed, it's an extraordinary figure. It's an extraordinary figure. Tariffs will, of course, Claire, affect that. And but there's one thing I'd remind listeners of, which is a little bit of sort of almost leaving cert economics, which is that pharmaceutical drugs are a necessity for people who require them. So it's what they're called price inelastic, which means that even if the price goes up, people still need them. So I think what will happen is the tariffs will be imposed on pharmaceutical goods, obviously coming from Ireland, but I'm not sure that that will lead to a direct switching out of product A to product B, because product A is made in Ireland. So for the next about 2 years, Claire, I think that we will probably have a minimal disruption to trade. A minimal disruption of trade.
But you know, David, we see what the Germans are discussing today. They're agonising over borrowing at least €1 trillion to spend on infrastructure and defence. So, you know, they've turned their economic fundamentals on their head, or they're about to. Like, this shift in the world order being pioneered by Trump in the last 50-odd days is having huge impacts, isn't it?
I mean, you've put your finger on exactly what is important here, which is Donald Trump and J.D. Vance together have managed to do what no European has done in 100 or 200 years, which is unify the European Union at one single goal. And we have to get our heads around the fact now that the European Union is going to be a German Union for the next decade or so. And by that I mean Germany was a sleeping economic giant for decades after the Second World War. They didn't want to lead, and many people didn't want them to lead. So as long as the American military umbrella was over Europe, the Germans were quiet and were happy to take a backseat role. They have torn up the playbook of German economic and foreign policy, which was in place since the Berlin airlift. And they have now said, we are going to be the custodian of the Eastern Front with Russia. We are going to borrow, so let's get our heads around this, 900 billion, let's say €1 trillion. That is 20% of German national income. They are going to borrow over the next 10 years. A significant amount of that they are going to put in switching from their car industry to an arms industry. Mm-hmm. Now, that is a totally new world, okay? It's a totally, totally new world. In fact, it's a shock, Claire, as big as German unification to the European Union.
And listen, can I ask you about the role of the United Kingdom in all of this? Because speaking of a golden age, I mean, for Keir Starmer's short run as Prime Minister thus far, his dealings with Trump certainly, you know, gave him a cloak of, you know, the one who was going to lead us out of this from a European perspective, which felt very weird in an era of Brexit. But he has played that role very well. But where does that lead him and the United Kingdom now?
Well, it's a fascinating thing, but imagine this, that Donald Trump has destroyed Brexit. And by that, I mean the following. So the last 10 years, so Brexit is 10 years old next year. The European Union, after the Brexit negotiations, didn't ever want to negotiate again with a Brexit Britain. So traumatized were they by the negotiations. That's the first thing. The second thing is Britain didn't want anything to do with Europe. Now, if you look at all the polls in the UK, Brexit has never been more unpopular. English people know that they've made a mistake. The economy has not done anything in the last 10 years. In fact, it's gone backwards. And politically, Britain is isolated. Now is this extraordinary off-ramp for Brexit. I think what is likely to happen is the following. The Europeans now need the British in NATO. They need the military side of Britain. The British need the Europeans because they've been abandoned by the United States. So the Atlanticist idea that drove British policy since 1945 was always, we are close to America, America won't abandon us. Now America said, you know what, we're not that plussed about you. So in the Foreign Office in the UK will be these conversations going on right now. What do we do? The obvious things to get closer to the EU. The EU needs Britain. Britain needs the EU. The enemy is Russia. America has abandoned us. Now, what is, he's talking about Keir Starmer. All politicians, as you and I know, want to be the great man or the great woman in history. They want to make the big move. Now, Keir Starmer, as Labour leader, could be the man who decides, let's actually have a second referendum on Brexit within the next 18 months. Why would he do that? A, because he believes it. B, because it's incredibly popular now. It's a slam dunk for... I was looking at recent polls. Over 60% of British people think it was a bad idea. Mm-hmm. Only 30% of British people now think it was a good idea. That's Brexit. He could destroy the reform movement because they're aligned to Trump, which is electorally unbelievably toxic. And he could be go into the history books as the man who brought Britain back into Europe. He could also give the Labour Party in England a purpose, which they do not have.
David, you've given us something that to look forward to there now. Another Brexit referendum. We can't wait. Listen, great.
I think that's what happens when the world changes.
Yeah.
Loads of things happen.
The unthinkable.
And you can never really foretell them. Exactly. Exactly, Claire.
David, great to talk to you. Let's do it again as things move on. Great to have you with us. That's David Mac-Williams. And you know what? There was a period of time when we weren't allowed to speak about Brexit at all because everybody had enough of it. But coming up after the break, we're going to be mentioning it again because there are new Brexit rules on the way that may mean there are gaps on shelves in Northern Ireland.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.